Hey everyone, you're listening to But Why Though the Podcast, the podcast where Kate, Matt, and myself, Adrian, talk about the things people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, make sure that you rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcast, or wherever you're listening to us on. It helps people find us, and it helps us find you. And if you want to support us a little more, head over to our Patreon at patreon.com/butwhythoughpc. As one of our lovely patrons, you get access to episodes early, along with show notes, But Why Though swag, and personalized content. But really, we're just happy you're here. Enjoy the show, and welcome to the Familia.
Another episode of But Why Though the Podcast, and today we're taking a look at Critical Role. As always, I'm your host Kate. I'm here with Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And as probably the biggest D&D fan on the podcast, Adrian will be leading us through this episode.
Yeah, we're doing it. We're talking about Critical Role and D&D. If you are wondering why we're dedicating a whole episode to Critical Role when we've already done a whole episode on D&D during episode 59, well, they're big enough where I think they deserve their whole episode. They've gone from really, really small to basically doing live shows at New York Comic Con and selling out theaters.
Yeah.
So that's why we're talking about them today. And as per usual, we'll start off with a question. And I wasn't really sure how to do it because last time on our D&D episode, if you haven't listened to it, we talked about like what kind of characters we'd be. And I wasn't sure how familiar you guys were with Critical Role like in and of itself. So we're just going to go with that. How familiar are you with Critical Role?
So I've watched a few of their episodes. I just have a really hard time like catching... I don't have cable. I'm not in the like things... How do you say it? Like
they usually do Twitch.
Well, I know, but I'm saying, like, I don't have cable. I'm no longer in the mode of sit down in front of my TV at 7 o'clock to watch this. And so, like, getting back into that mode has been kind of hard. But the episodes that I have seen, I've really, really liked, and I really love the cast. So I need to get on it and watch more. But I know who they are. I just can't tell you all of the stuff from the different seasons and everything.
I know they exist. And I know they play D&D, and I know they're big, and I know they're on Twitch and YouTube. And that's about it. I don't watch them. I never have watched them. I don't really care to watch D&D. It's not like it's bad, per se. I think I've watched a few, but haven't been Critical Role ones. I just don't find it that fascinating.
So, we'll just go quick their brief background. Like, they don't have, like, a super long history, right? Like, they haven't been around for more than 10 years or anything, but... I'll give you a background of kind of how the games got started and how they've kind of got from where they were to where they are, and then we'll get into some of their but why those, which some include their charity work, which I think is one of the biggest reasons why they're such a great staple for fandom in general. So Critical Role is a weekly live stream Dungeons & Dragons game set in Zendaya, which the world is created by the DM, who is an amazing voice actor, Matthew Mercer. Each week, Matthew leads his friends and fellow voice actors on epic adventures on Twitch and YouTube primarily. The Critical Role storyline occurs in the campaigns made up of series of story arcs that are played over multiple episodes. Between the major story arcs, the characters rest, resupply, go on side quests. In addition, each character has a backstory, an unfinished part of their history that enters into the campaign at irregular intervals, so there's lots of character development within their characters, lots of mystery and intrigue. It basically turns into, like, a weekly soap for me at the end of the day. The first campaign began about 2 years ago, prior to the series even being streamed or anything. It was just a simplified Dungeons and Dragons 4th edition game for one of the cast members' birthdays, where a bunch of like them got together because they knew each other through the industry. But the group enjoyed the initial game so much that they just continued to play. They switched over to Pathfinder, which is like a revised version of the 3rd edition, and continued playing their story as the super high-intensity team, or shit. Felicia Day, who... I mean, do I have to explain who Felicia Day is? We should all know who Felicia Day is, right?
If you're
geek pop culture, you should know who Felicia Day is. She had heard about their private home games that they'd had, and approached the group about doing it on stream with Geek and Sundry. So in order to streamline the gameplay for the live show, the characters were converted from Pathfinder over to Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, which around this time had just come out in 2014. And by March 2015, they began airing the show weekly. And they had to switch up their group name to something that wasn't super high-intensity team for obvious reasons. Yeah, so basically, like, they just... we're just playing at home together. If you go like on YouTube, there's a bunch of their home games, like home videos of them just getting into it and going crazy, like in someone's dining room. And because all these people are connected, particularly like Felicia Day and Ashley Johnson, one of the cast members, are real connected in like the Hollywood industry, they invited them to go on Geek and Sundry, and everything kind of just took off from there. So we'll talk about these actors more in depth when we get to the cast parts. I think the cast really makes this. I don't know if this would do as well if you just plugged in different people.
Yeah.
But the voice actors include Matthew Mercer, Ashley Johnson, Laura Bailey, Liam O'Brien, Marisha Ray, Sam Riegel, Taliesin Jeffrey, and Travis Willingham. So in terms of the show, they're just broken up into different campaigns, and the first campaign that they had was with Vox Machina, which is the one that they had to change the name to. And just for reference, like, I'm not going to give you like a whole bunch of storylines of any of this stuff. I think like it's the storylines and like the intrigue is like enough. And they just started the second campaign, so I don't want to give too much of the background into what happens in the storyline. But just for like the sheer numbers, the first campaign was streamed from about 2015 and ended in November 2017, but they had that campaign going since like 2013 or so. So it went for a very, very long time. In terms of the arcs that were streamed, it was cut into 6 different story arcs, and it totaled 115 episodes from start to finish when they were streaming it. And there is this wonderful website called Crit Stats, and they basically keep track of like how many hours they've played, how many you know natural ones they've gotten, how many natural 20s and things like that. And they recorded 773 hours of total gameplay that
Holy
these people play through.
Crap.
And that's just from 2015 to 2017, not even counting probably the hours that they had before, because you have to consider like each of these episodes takes about 3 to 4 hours, depending on like how into it they get or how far they get into it. And Kate and I can tell you from trying to do our own games through like the podcast, like those games just like last, and it's kind of hard to find like a stopping point. It's like when your mom was like, "Oh, just pause the game and just come back later." Like, you know, you have to find a good stopping point, and sometimes it takes longer than others. In terms of like the in-game days, they even tracked like how many in-game days they had, and they had 454 in-game days that span that time period. And if you go look on their YouTube channel, about every episode has at least 500,000 views, some ranging up into like the millions, but it usually ranges from about 500 to 600 views, and over 115 episodes is a lot of views.
Damn.
Their second campaign with the Mighty Nine started in January 2018 and is still going today. They're currently in their third arc, and they're 36 episodes in at the time of this recording. Actually, when the episode releases, then this Wednesday, the Thursday, they'll be recording episode 37 to kick off New York Comic Con. So, episode 37 is incoming. January 11th, specifically, this year when it came out, the second campaign's first episode peaked at 135,000 views on Twitch and YouTube, compared to their first campaign's finale that only averaged about 40,000 views. So,
and is that views or viewers watching them in live?
Yeah, that was them watching them live.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember watching it. I was like, man, this is a lot of people here watching these people play Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah, Twitch usually has a two different section between views total and viewers at one time.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, but it was viewers at one time. Because I was watching, I went back, I was trying to see what the differences were. But this was simultaneously 135 viewers, 1,000 viewers between Twitch and YouTube.
That's insane.
Yeah, because they average about 20, 30,000 views weekly. But this intro one was packed.
So they got ninja numbers for a week.
They did get ninja numbers.
Yeah.
135,000 people tuned in to watch some nerds play D&D.
Yeah, for 3 hours. It was pretty insane. That's crazy. Like I said, on average, they average about 30, 40,000 viewers throughout the 4 hours episodes. So they still get pretty steady numbers and basically run the Dungeons & Dragons channel. On Thursday nights.
Yeah.
So the big thing that they've kind of launched since we did our Dungeons and Dragons recording is in 2018 or June 2018, Critical Role launched its own Twitch and YouTube channel with the intent of self-producing new shows and content. And although Critical Role is going to remain on Geek and Sundry's channel for now, they've moved their set from the Legendary Digital Network Studios with Geek & Sundry to their own studio as of July 2018. So they're basically slowly but surely kind of moving away from Geek & Sundry to kind of be their own thing, which I think is relevant and I think they should do, mainly because without the power of Critical Role, I don't know how great Geek & Sundry's Twitch channel will do. So I'm glad they're sticking on the Twitch channel for now, but I definitely foresee them moving off and kind of being their own thing exclusively here in the next few years, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. At least they're large enough to possibly do that, because we see that all the time that happens, and some of the people just are not large enough to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think
why he can say may not like that.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, they at least let them move their set to this just really dope set with this huge ass table and smoke coming up behind them and stuff. It's legit production values and everything. Even if you watch their Twitch stream and they between their breaks they'll stream commercials of other Geek & Sundry content and chat does not want to watch anything other than the Geek and the Critical Role people. So we'll see how it goes. But for now, they're still on the Geek & Sundry channel, but slowly kind of moving away from that process just because they've gotten so big and I think they're ready to kind of make the jump on their own. Other media that's connected directly to Critical Role. That I'm not going to talk too in depth about in about why those, but I think they're still worth a mention to kind of get people caught up on things if you're ever wanting to take the deep dive and get more information about Critical Role in general. So they have Tox Machina, which is basically a weekly fan-centered talk show where they discuss last week's episode. They'll bring on a cast member and they'll talk about what happened in the show and things like that. It's essentially kind of Talking Dead, I guess, is the most recent thing that I can relate it to. Mm-hmm. They also do one-shots, and if you haven't listened to our D&D episode, one-shots are basically just one-off games that really don't have really any significance to their overarching game. Some of them are completely random and it was an all a dream kind of thing, or it was something completely different. They had a honey heist and all these kind of things. They basically do them when they can't get the majority of the cast members together because, they're voice actors, they're doing all these conventions and things like that. So every now and again, they'll do one shots just for fun and they'll bring in other guests and they're pretty entertaining to watch because sometimes they'll do them as their characters in the game. So picture a barbarian running his own game with an intelligence of 8. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty interesting.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So they also have a comic book that's pretty good that they've been producing over the last year or so. It basically just covers the events from the pre-streaming days. So it gives you a lot more background on the characters before we see them in their popularity. And it's pretty good. They had a webcomic series too that a couple of cast members did, but they've gotten like their own publisher and everything like that to do like a legit comic book, so it's really nice. Basically, all of their episodes now have been turned into the podcast form. So if you just only want the audio of what they talk about, whether that's like on Talks Machina or like one shots, or the actual Critical Role episodes, you can find them basically anywhere you want in podcast form, which I think is convenient for a lot of people who don't want to sit there and just watch them roll dice.
Yeah.
Yeah. They also just recently released, they've been releasing these Between the Sheets episodes, and this is like between like the D&D sheets, not like the bed sheets.
It's a very good name.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's like very clever. Like they know what they're doing. But it's essentially like a new segment where like they sit down with individual cast members and talk about their lives, essentially. So getting like background, like what got them into this and things like that. They've done two so far at the time of this recording, one with Taliesin and one with Travis Willingham. And they've just been like really, really cool to kind of get more background on who they are as a person and kind of what got them there. And they're just really good tools to kind of, if you want to know what the cast members are like, it's a really great way to do it outside of what they're doing on Critical Role every week. And something that they've been recently doing with this current campaign is the Critical Recap, where essentially someone just recaps the last week's previous episode in about 10 minutes or so. So it's a good way to catch up if you've missed it and you want to catch it live. Or yeah, if you just missed like the last like half, you can kind of like, you know, go in there and get it, or just like a refresher. So it's pretty good. I've done it, you know, once or twice, and it's pretty broad enough where you're not missing too much of the what happened in that week's episode, and you're pretty much caught up for that Thursday's episode.
Okay.
So now we can get into some of the But Why Those, and I think like the biggest But Why Those that I wanted to cover for Critical Role was essentially the cast, for one, their impact on D&D. Of course, their charity work, and then to finish it off, just their impact on their fans, and we'll mix in our fan but why those into that. So before we get into that, do you have any burning questions about their background before we get into the cast?
No, I want to hear you talk about it, and then I'll have questions. Matt?
Mm-mm. Cool. So the cast. So the cast of Critical Role is filled with amazingly talented voice actors who are just like super nerdy and passionate about geekdom at the end of the day. So despite all of their success, from like really just doing D&D in their kitchen to like having billboards promoting the second campaign in LA, like they're still the same down-to-earth people now as if you were to go back and look at their home games. And it's just really, really cool to see. So you get basically the same people in terms of like how much they're into the game now as you would have in 2015. And I think a real big part of like they've used their platform as like staples in the D&D community and the pop culture community in general to like be real open and connected with their fans on social media and at conventions. I think it's a real connection when you watch them week to week for a number of years. Watching them and like watching them interact with like fans and stuff, it really reminds me of the connections you get when you watch people with like Twitch streamers and mm-hmm. stuff. Like I've like met Twitch streamers. I know you guys have met Twitch streamers, yeah. And like when you meet them, it's like really, really cool. But I think Critical Role has the added bonus of like being able to hear their voices in games and in anime, where like when I hear their voices, I'm like, oh my God, that's Matthew Mercer. Like, yeah. That's awesome. So I just think it gives you like an added level of connection that I think is really cool. And then of course, because they're voice actors, they go in on their characters. Like not only are they voice actors, but I think almost all of them have some background in theater or musical theater, like at the college level. So like they get real, real into their characters. I think the coolest thing is that for the most part, based on like what I've seen from their character, like themselves as individuals, their characters really aren't even how they are in real life. So it just gives you like an added, you know, level of like dimension and like depth to the story to know that like they're that into it, that they're basically embodying a new person.
That's really cool.
Because like that, and because like how much they care about it, like I've seen genuine laugh. I've seen like them like legitimately crying, like when a character dies or something happens. And I've seen like tears of like joy when they've needed to overcome like a big obstacle and heartbreak and things like that. And it all seems genuine to me. I don't think they're you know, laying it on thick at all. Because I really do think that they, like, turn off their brains when, like, the cameras are rolling at this point, and they just get in there and play.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you, I don't know if you know this, you know, maybe somebody's kind of talked about it. So have they always, like, when they were playing at home, did they also, like, put this much, like, life into their characters? Or is this something that they're doing? I mean, because obviously, watching them on a Twitch stream or listening to them, having that acting value is really important to, like, keeping audiences in. But do you know if, like, they were this dedicated when they were, you know, doing it, like, home games and stuff?
Yeah, so from like, the home, like, YouTube videos that I've seen, they're that into it. And I was listening to the Between the Sheets with Travis Willingham, who's married to Laura Bailey. And he said that when he first went in there, he didn't really know what to expect. And, like, as soon as, like, they walked in the door, his wife, Laura Bailey, like, automatically got into, like, this British accent that she just used for, like, the entire time when they were there. So they were into it basically from the start, which is probably why, like, Felicia Day was so interested in, like, bringing them on for Geek & Sundry.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that also helps, too, right? Because, like, it's not an act for the camera. Like, it's an act, but it's, like, these people genuinely are here to play and, like, do this. Like, they're doing this as a piece of the game, not just as, like, their job.
Yeah, and some of the big controversy that you might see, like, on Reddit or on Twitter and stuff is that it's all scripted and they know what's going to happen. But I think it's just more so they're just really, really good at voice acting and acting that it just comes off as really, really genuine. And I don't think people can, like, handle, like, how good they are at it.
Yeah.
So we'll break down the cast. We'll talk about some of the things that they're in. I mean, these people are in, like, way more of the things that I'm going to list, but I think these are just, like, the most... most notable things that people might know them from. So we'll start with Matthew Mercer, who is the Dungeon Master. And again, like, the world that they're in, he made this. Like, that it still, like, blows my mind to this day that he made the world, essentially. Like, he knows all of, like, the maps and, like, the people and stuff. And he balances so many different characters and voices throughout, like, the campaign that it's actually insane. And I don't know how a human being can do it.
So, like, what are the things when we met some devs at PAX, or not devs, yeah, devs, narrative designers for some games at PAX West, and talking to them and stuff. And they were saying, like, yeah, if you're a DM, put that on your list or in your resume. Like, that's world building. That is narrative design. Like, that's a life skill, especially for, you know, being in that industry. And so, like, it's really cool, like, just seeing how much work DMs put in, and then, like, listen to you kind of, like, talk about how Mercer knows everything. Like, he is, like, living in this world. And I'm just kind of like, man, there are more things that just need to go on resumes that revolve around D&D or video games and stuff like that. But
yeah, no, you're exactly right. It's, like, insane. Like, this is a very, very expansive world that, like, when people ask him things on, like, the fireside chats or, like, the, you know, the Talks Machina stuff, like, he just knows it. I'm just like, and he's not, like, pulling out of his butt. Like, he made that. And, like, I've made one shots for, like, my family and stuff, and, like, trying to remember, like, the innkeeper's name is, like, hard for me. I can't imagine, like, remembering an innkeeper's name of, like, the town seven towns over.
Yeah.
And the hope that they might go there that day. Like, it's just really, really cool. But, like, one of the biggest things that he just embodies whatever character that, you know, whether it's, like, a small innkeeper's wife to just, like, this giant ogre, like, he is able to embody these characters super well. And even, like, the cast members, whenever he brings out a new character, they're just blown away by how well he does the voices. So he's done things like Hit in Dragon Ball Super. I know, like, when I first saw Hit, I know you guys might not be familiar with Dragon Ball Super, but I know when I saw the dub, I was like, oh my god, is that Matthew Mercer? And I was just blown away. And I was just so much more invested in that, you know, arc because I knew it was Matthew Mercer. So I'm very, this is my, like, plug of, like, it doesn't matter if you watch sub or dub, you know, as long as you just watch it. He's also MacReady in Fallout 4. He's McCree in Overwatch and Levi in Attack on Titan. He's been in a whole bunch of other stuff. I think those are just, like, kind of the biggest ones that people might know at first mention.
So, since we are talking about Matthew Mercer and we talk about all this crowd interaction, are we going to talk about kind of, like, what's going on today where a lot of people are upset with him?
Oh, yeah.
Because they're upset with, like, his political stances
and
stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, like,
I know it's just been a lot recently, so that's why I asked.
Yeah. No, I mean, I was reading it this morning, like, to be honest, and I just think that, like, a lot of it is just because they're still just real people.
Yeah. You know? It was kind of like our stuff, right? Like, yeah, at the end like of the day, it's like, that's his show. That's his, what he's created. And, I mean, granted, like, there is, like, you conduct yourself differently, but ultimately, like, if it's something that he's creating and it's his art, it's gonna have his opinions in it, because you can't, that's art. Well,
it's not
right?
even so much what his opinions are in his art, it's more of him having opinions, I think, in the first place.
Yeah.
Yeah, people just don't like people having opinions on things.
Well, yeah, no. Yeah. Well, yeah, no. I'm saying, like, in his defense for this whole thing, like, if it's something you create, you're putting yourself into it, so of course you're there, like, of course they're there, but then at the same time, like, Not at the same time, but, like, from what those people are saying, they're like, how dare you have an opinion and say it, and now I'm going to boycott your show. But probably not really.
Yeah. I mean, and they run into things like that all the time.
Yeah.
So, like, Matthew Mercer, his wife, Marisha Ray, who's on the show as well, like, they're, and Liam O'Brien, I mean, all of them really are pretty vocal advocates of, like, something or another, and they get attacked constantly on Twitter for their views. But they just ferociously will still defend and advocate for whatever they're advocating for. Matthew Mercer in particular is real big on, you know, everything from, like, women's rights to, you know, mental health and things like that, because he struggled with mental health in the past. So he's a big advocate on that. So, and it's just interesting, and I'm glad you brought it up, Matt, because that was something that I wasn't sure if I was going to talk about or not. But, like, there's just still real people, and I don't think that they're, like, I don't think you should attack them on Twitter for having their views. It's like someone attacking Kate, like, on Twitter for her, like, political views. It's dumb whether it's, like, attacking Kate or attacking Matthew Mercer. Like, it's just frivolous and just silly.
I just think it's reached the point. I just think it's also one of those they've reached a point to be that big, because obviously we see it all the time with celebrities and, like, actual actors and whatnot, not saying the voice actors below them, but, you know, people that are on the well more, like, A-list people. And we see it all the time, and then to see, like, you know, people that play D&D on Twitch.
I see what you're saying. So it's kind of like, holy crap, you're having this type of backlash because you were this big and now with this celebrity status, and you go on Twitch and play D&D.
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. That is kind of weird. I hadn't thought about that. I mean, like, I guess it's, like, this new world of, like, what celebrity means, I guess. Because, like, streamers now are celebs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They think they're celebs.
Well, they think there's... Some of them genuinely are, and some of them... Yeah,
I mean, they still get attacked when they say stupid... But they are like... But, like, attacking those people for saying stupid stuff, like, on stream is, like, not the same as attacking, like,
And it's also different, if it's, like, it's stupid stuff versus, like, a political view. Like, sometimes those cross over. But, like, crossing a line and using, like, wrong types of language on stream or anything like that. Like, that's a different... Then, like, at least from, like, what I understood, like, it wasn't necessarily even a political view that he shared, like, before the thing, so much as it was, like, a we're standing with women type thing, which I guess is extremely political now. Like, that's one of the things that he didn't, like, stand up on his show and yell fuck Trump before it, and yet he was getting treated like he kicked somebody's baby.
Yeah, it was, like, really weird, especially because, like, they don't ever talk about that stuff.
Yeah.
In the games, like, ever. Like, they never talk about any of that stuff, like, while they're on stream. They conduct themselves, like, in a very, like, non-political fashion.
Which is probably why people Twitter. Got mad,
like, let the dude
right?
talk about what he wants to on Twitter.
Well, I mean, a lot of people do that. I mean, we have movie stars at all the time. I'm sure there's been at least one movie star or some form that you guys refuse to go watch their stuff just because...
Yeah, I mean...
Even though in their movies, you would never...
If you like somebody who does things, then you follow them and you watch them, I find it really hard to believe that if you're a Critical Role fan getting mad about this, that you didn't already know that these actors had those opinions already, right? Like, it's...
Yeah, no, you're completely right. Especially, like, if you know anything about, like, his wife, Marisha Ray, who is, like, a huge advocate for, like, women's rights and stuff. Like, so do you expect Matthew Mercer not to be?
Yeah.
When he's, like, married to her?
Yes.
Like,
yeah,
what?
So it's just one of those things where it's kind of, like, I just don't like the whole, like, oh my god, why are you this way? It's like, well, they're very open on Twitter about things, and I would assume you follow them if you like them, so how are you just now picking up on this?
Yeah, I think, like, the big point is, for here, is, like, Matt's point of, like, they're at the celebrity where they get attacked, like, to, like, this ferocity, which is, like, a good and a bad thing.
And the cool thing is, too, is, like, even in his response, which was great, they're also at the point where they can get attacked for this, and then they can say, okay, just don't watch your show, and they're perfectly fine.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's pretty much what he said. He was just like, I'm not going to not support this, and I'm not going to back down, and you can just not watch us. I don't need your viewership.
I still find it interesting. Obviously, we're talking about, like, them personally, but the whole point of, like, we've talked about their art, per se, or their show, per se. Yeah. It had nothing to do with anything that they say. And
oh,
I guess
yeah.
trying to have this people that some people cannot disconnect, I guess, some things.
Yeah, from the person and the... Yeah.
Because I'm like, so you don't want to watch D&D because it had nothing to do with, like, the actual show itself.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't want to go see this movie over something that had nothing to do with the actual movie itself. Because
I think that there are some things that people create that have everything to do with what they're saying.
Right.
And that's a different situation than, like, we're going to go turn into our half-elves and druids and barbarians and play this game. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. it's interesting.
Yeah. But, like, at the end of the day, if you're not going to watch it, like, just don't watch it.
Yeah.
You have to, like, add them on Twitter.
Yeah. Don't watch like, it, I'm and not... don't harass the dude. Like, just go away.
Yeah, exactly. But that's just where they're at now. I don't think if he would have tweeted stuff like that 3 years ago, he would have gotten any response from anybody. So,
yeah.
Good for you, Matthew Mercer, for standing up for what you believe in. So, other cast members include Ashley Johnson, who in the first campaign played a gnome cleric and is now playing... in an Asimar barbarian in the second campaign. She has a whole bunch of credits, like dating back to like when she was a kid, but some of her biggest ones in terms of like voice acting and acting in general, Gretchen Grundler from Recess.
Yes.
Yeah. Tara from Teen Titans.
Gwen, the good Teen Titans or whatever the hell that they keep trying to show.
Well, she's done both. So she did like the old school Teen Titans, I guess not old school Teen Titans, but like the one on Cartoon Network, and then she did some of the Teen Titans Go, and I hope she never touches Titans. Keep her far away from Titans.
Do you know if she voices Tara in the movie? Because of the Titans movie that they did, the animated
I'm
one?
I'm pretty sure she does, because she voices Tara in Teen Titans Go, so I would imagine...
they keep it with the same person?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they keep it with the same person.
I'd be surprised, though.
I'm pretty sure they did. I don't think they'd like not bring her on. She's like a big enough person for them to bring her on, I'm pretty
yeah.
sure. Then she's also Gwen in Ben 10.
I like Gwen in Ben 10.
Yeah, she basically does like all the Gwens, like in all of the different seasons that they've done for that show. But yeah, she was there from the beginning. She's also Ellie from Last of Us 1 and 2. And her biggest role that kind of keeps her from bouncing in and out of being on Critical Role like weekly is Patterson on Blind Spot, which she films like in New York, so she has to like go like sometimes she Skypes in, sometimes she gets like a break and gets to go to LA
that
and film
got
with
canceled.
The crew. She's still filming it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I keep thinking
sure
it got
didn't.
Canceled too. I keep thinking it gets canceled, but it keeps going. She's been doing it for like a long time.
Yeah, I
time.
Remember hearing about it a few years ago, but then I thought it was just like mm-hmm. people didn't care for it.
No, I mean, that's also the reason why Sif didn't come back.
Right.
Yeah, that makes sense. Blind spotted.
I don't
blind
watch cable TV, so there's
everything.
A few shows that basically if I don't see really on Netflix or something, I'm like, well, I guess they're done.
If your show doesn't come on Netflix, it never existed.
Pretty much. Welcome to
it
my world.
It is true, though. I guess I've never seen... Like, I haven't even seen that thing like on Hulu, or I haven't even looked for it like on Hulu, so I'm not sure. But
I
she's
had
a recurring
it in my
role
queue on
that,
Hulu,
so.
And then I was just like, I have other stuff to watch.
True. That's basically what it comes down to. But she... Yeah, so she's in and out, but I think her biggest contribution was definitely, like, her connection with Felicia Day mm-hmm. and just getting that whole thing rolling. So, like,
oh,
they...
And she is a voice actress and, like, a actress, live-action actress,
yeah,
too.
Right. She's, so, like, one of the few who does both. I think she's, like, one of the only ones who does, like, both consistently.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. So there's also Laura Bailey, one of my favorites on the show. She played a half-elf ranger and rogue in Campaign 1, and now she plays a tiefling cleric in Campaign 2. Her voices include Kid Trunks / Gotenks in Dragon Ball Z, Keiko in Yu Yu Hakusho, Chun Li in some of the more recent Street Fighters, Nadine Ross in Uncharted, which she was nominated for Best Performances for, and Jaina Proudmoore in World of Warcraft, and a whole bunch of other ones.
She has such a great voice.
Yeah, she has a great voice and such a wide range. She's very, very rangy, which is probably why she has so many credits. But I think those are just some of the biggest ones, and the ones that I recognize her from.
From Kid Trunks to Jaina Proudmoore.
Yeah, right? Like, that's huge. Huge jump. And she's also done a bunch of motion capture stuff. So she did motion capture stuff for Uncharted. She did some motion capture stuff for Shadows of Mordor too. So she's even getting into that realm, which I think is super awesome. Nice. Liam O'Brien, he played a half-elf rogue paladin in Campaign 1 and now plays a human wizard in Campaign 2. He has credits for Nephrite in Sailor Moon Crystal, Gaara in Naruto, and Illidan Stormrage in World of Warcraft, which I think is another pretty big range, and Illidan Stormrage's voice is like one of my favorites in World of Warcraft, so
nice.
And he's super cool.
Yeah, Nephrite and Gaara are like two completely different characters when you think of like personality and voice.
Yeah, and even his characters that he's playing in Critical Role are completely opposite. I think all, they're both very opposite to his personality too, if you like follow him on Twitter or see him talk like on some of the other shows. Then you have Marisha Ray, married to Matthew Mercer. She played a half-elf druid in Campaign 1 and now plays a human monk in Campaign 2. She doesn't have like as many big credits just because she's younger and she's newer into the voice acting arena, but Margaret from Persona 4, AJ Mason in Friday 13th, the game.
That's dead.
And yeah. But her big thing right now is that she's basically the creative director for Critical Role and is basically like headlining like their move away from Geek & Sundry and stuff. So she keeps well busy, and she is gets into character really, really well. Like, her characters are completely different from Campaign 1 to Campaign 2.
Yeah.
Sam Riegel, he played a gnome bard in Campaign 1, and now he plays a female goblin rogue in Campaign 2.
Like Matt and Gnome.
Yeah, Gnomes he plays best. Little characters. He's voiced Donatello in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the 2003 to 2010 cartoon, and Revan in Winx Club. And
a whole bunch of other... Winx Club. Winx Club is great. I just want to say that right now.
Not what I expected from putting that in there.
The Winx Club is amazing. It used to be on whatever kids, it's on Netflix. If you're looking for a nice anime-esque show to watch about girl power, go watch The Winx Club. It's actually really, really good.
Yeah, well,
I watched it when it was coming out, like, years ago.
Way too much excitement for that.
Yeah, it's I was not expecting Winx Club. But judging, since it was, I remember it being on there, I just pass on it every time. But he was Riven in Winx Club and a whole bunch of, like, background characters in lots of video games.
Fun fact, Winx Club is actually an Italian animated series.
I did not know that.
I did not know it either.
Alrighty.
I'm going to have a Winx Club episode, guys.
Jesus.
That will be you talking to yourself.
Probably, because I can't find any other fans out there, probably.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this, please tell me that you're a fan.
And well, they're around to please you and you only.
Huh?
I said the Winx Club is around to please people like you and you only.
Yes. Fact.
I'm just glad I put it in there.
Sorry.
I guess. Sam Riegel's pretty cool because he doesn't like do any voices, and he's probably like the least veteran of the people who do like the show, but he's still like funny, entertaining enough where it doesn't really matter, and people forgive like his stupid mistakes pretty often.
That's funny.
But his sister Tatiana Riegel is a big Hollywood editor, so she's like gotten like awards and like works with like Quentin Tarantino and stuff, so he's always like at her events and stuff, so he's a good brother and a good actor, voice actor. We have Taliesin Jaffe, who played a human gunslinger in Campaign 1 and a tiefling blood hunter in Campaign 2. Don't at me for this, I know, I'm just trying to keep it spoiler light. He's voiced things like Basil Hawkins in One Piece, Blanca in Street Fighter, and he's the Flash in Mortal Kombat versus DC, and again, a whole bunch of other, you know, background characters and stuff like that.
The game was also terrible.
What? Mortal Kombat versus DC? I love that game.
It was PG-13 for a Mortal Kombat game.
It was.
But I whooped some ass in that game. I love that game.
I mean, I like it better than Street Fighter. That's probably, like, my, like, most unpopular opinion about video games is I hate Street Fighter, and I think it's awful.
But I don't like any fighting game, so it doesn't matter.
I love fighting games, but
I play Mortal Kombat over Street Fighter. Yeah, I'm just not like, I don't just have like the macro or the micro for Street Fighter. I don't have like the big ass thing that you're supposed to have when you play Street Fighter.
Oh,
that community is just not the best. Have you ever like watched those people play like in tournaments and stuff?
I also just think like the Street Fighter fan base are probably like fighter, like people who play fighters are like automatically kind of dickish, but like the Street Fighter ones are like the worst in my opinion from interacting with them. So
yeah, but I mean, two of these people are voices in Street Fighter, so
that's
that.
Cool.
Yeah,
I like the characters. Don't yeah, like exactly. The game.
The game might be broken about 10 years too, if not less.
Kate's hot takes: Street Fighter and, sucks.
The movie is terrible.
How dare you insult that movie? No, I mean that movie is terrible.
That movie is pretty fun. That movie is fun, guys.
I remember watching it as a kid, going, "This isn't bad." Then I watched an adult, going, "Oh, this was very bad."
See, that may be the problem. I haven't watched it as an adult.
Oh, I did. When it came on Netflix, I did.
It might be like Mortal Kombat. Exactly. Was the one we tried to watch?
Oh, it is.
No. The first Mortal Kombat still holds up. The second one.
Second one's awful.
The one with Jax. That
one
is
so awful. To be fair, the Street Fighter movie is better than a Mortal Kombat movie, but it's not by much. And
Mortal Kombat 2.
They're both terrible.
No, the first Mortal Kombat movie is amazing.
If you would listen to what I'm saying, I said... See, it's what you get for not listening. I said Street Fighter is better than the second Mortal Kombat movie, but they're both still awful.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. Won't accept slander. Okay. I'm sorry.
Watched as a kid, but also like John-Claude Van Damme very much as a kid.
Oh, yeah.
And then I grew up and watched it, and I was like, this is awful and terrible.
I just know Gomez is Captain Bison, and that's why I liked it.
In his balloon inflatable weird suit.
It was so cool.
Maybe.
Looks like Shazam's suit.
Well, not far off.
Okay, let's move on. Critical Role. Sorry.
So the last cast member, Travis Willingham, he played a Goliath barbarian fighter in Campaign 1, and now he plays a half-elf orc in Campaign 2. He's done some pretty big names, like Roy Mustang in Full Metal Alchemist.
Yeah.
Heretic in Batman Bad Blood. Mori in Uran High School Host Club. I put that in there for Oran. See, I don't watch.
Oran High School Host Club.
I'm guessing you're a big fan of that too.
I am.
Stefani watches that. It's not my kind of anime.
Great shoujo.
I put it in there for like the show, the shoujo fans.
It's great.
But he's married to Laura Bailey, and I love.
So is everybody just married on this thing?
Well,
how do you think they got started? They all had a family get together.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Basically what it is. So Matthew Mercer and Marcia Ray are married, and then Travis and Laura are married, and they just had a baby like 9 weeks ago.
Gotcha.
Which their reveal was beautiful and very nerdy. So in addition to these cast members, because of their connection to Geek and Sundry, they've had like lots of really great guest stars who come in for, you know, one or two episodes. So Felicia Day, of course, has been on there. Will Wheaton, who I don't think needs any introduction. Whenever he comes on, like, things go bad. So, like, any dice that Will Wheaton touches, they, like, don't use.
That's
because
funny.
They're cursed, essentially. Noelle Stevenson, she's the creator and the showrunner for the new She-Ra show that's going to be coming out. John Hader, Napoleon Dynamite. I'm going to mispronounce his name again.
Joe Manganiello.
Yeah, Joe Manganiello.
Joe Manganiello.
Yeah, from True Blood.
I love him. I'll cede her vote on True Blood.
Gross.
Yeah, I don't watch True Blood. But I know that he's married to Sofia Vergara.
And
that's where
their children will be insanely attractive.
Yeah, because he is an attractive dude. Mm-hmm. So him and Travis being like on the same set is like crazy, because they're just like two just giant men who play Dungeons and Dragons, which I think is really nice.
That's really cool. He's also Deathstroke in the DZ and Shambles U.
I forgot about that. But she actually does look
cool. I forgot about that too, actually. Jesus, I forgot about that.
He actually looks pretty good too.
But yeah, he looks
really good.
Great as Slade.
But the rest of your thing can burn down.
So some of the newer ones have been Kerry Payton. He does lots of voices, like lots of DC voices, but most notably Cyborg for the animated shows. Sumlali Montano, Montano,
Montano, Montano.
Montano, Montano. She's Asian, so I know, like, I know they pronounce it differently, but I just couldn't find exactly where they pronounce her name. But she's super, super good, and I really love the episode that she was on because she, like, she just has like this voice in the game that's like just so soothing and like nice. But the characters that she's played or that she's voice acted for, like Admiral Sanda and Voltron, if you're familiar with like the new Voltron series in on Netflix, Admiral Sanda's a dick. So it's like the dichotomy there is like really crazy, and she's also Mira in Thrones of Atlantis, the animated movie as well. So,
Who kills a lot of people?
Yes! Mira's so awesome in the animated universe.
yeah, and they have a whole bunch more. I just thought that these were like the ones that at least Kate would know the most, so that's why I put these ones
I
in
mean,
there.
obviously, I had like 10 outbursts.
So, but at the end of the day, like the cast feels like a big family. Part of that's because like some like half the cast is married to each other, but the other part is like they've just known each other for so long, have been in the industry for so long, that whenever you watch them, it really just feels like family. It doesn't ever feel like there's like they hate each other. They feel like they genuinely want to be there. And like although I've never met any of them, even though I really, really do want to meet some of them, like I feel like they're my friends a little bit. And I know when Travis and Laura, they announced their baby, that they were having a baby with like a character sheet and like football stuff, and it was like Little Willingham or something like that. It was just like really cute, and I was like, oh, this is adorable.
This is a
Like
little
this is like
creepy.
this is the geek way to announce your baby, is to like make a little character sheet if you're like that big into D&D.
That's cute.
Favorite geekdom reveal I've seen.
There's a reveal that happened not too long ago where somebody ended up setting a fire to a thing and burned down 477,000 acres.
Well, that's not fun.
I had to balance this out. It was getting weird.
That made it not weird?
What?
I'm so confused. Adrian, just keep going. Pretend like this didn't happen.
So the next thing I just want to talk about is their impact on Dungeons and Dragons as kind of that realm. So if you haven't listened to episode 59, which you should go back and listen to, D&D has had like a big up and down trajectory since the late 70s and early 80s, where they've had like really, really big peaks. Then stuff like people saying that they were worshiping the devil happened, and people stopped playing, and then like printer presses went out. So like they've just been up and down over like the last few decades. Specifically during the late 2000s, D&D was on a bit of a downturn, mostly because people didn't like the fourth edition that had come out. And I really think Critical Role switching over from Pathfinder, which was like what everyone was playing instead of the fourth edition, to the fifth edition, really helped people forget that fourth edition was a thing and brought people back into playing D&D because they thought they saw that like this new edition was legit and it wasn't like terrible like the one that came before it. So ultimately the cast in and of itself is from different walks of life, and I think it really helps break the stigma surrounding the kind of people who play D&D. For in particularly Travis, who's like a 6'3" guy, 6'3", just giant white guy who played football and swam at TCU.
When did you play football at TCU?
This would have had to have been in the 90s, like late 90s.
Okay. Because I thought you said like 2000s, and I know he was part of the cocaine era.
No. This isn't like
Oh
late.
gosh, this is a giant of a man.
Yeah, he's huge. Yeah, he's super big. But he also like he was there like on like a small football scholarship, or like small athletic scholarships, but he was also there on a bigger like musical theater scholarship, which he decided to focus on. But
That is really cool. I'm there to play football and be in musicals.
yeah, because they basically like, what he did in high school was mostly musicals, but he was also like 6'3", so he could like still play football. So he had like that dynamic of being a jock and like a nerd, which is really interesting. But he was talking about on the Between the Sheets episode, like how he was worried about when they decided to start streaming it, like how he'd be perceived in terms of like the roles he'd be able to get and things like that. But after a conversation with his wife, Laura, she basically told him, like, who cares what people think, right? So, like, and then he talked about, like, well, now that he's been, the big guy, not stereotypical nerd on the show. So many like jockey guys, you know, have power lifters and football players and stuff have gone up to him and told him that like he got them into D&D because they saw that they didn't have to be a certain way, they didn't have to get judged or whatever to be in D&D like, openly and playing every week. So, and you can see that kind of like with all the cast, they come in all different shapes and sizes and stuff. So I can see that in each one of them, that they probably brought in some kind of people into D&D just based on like who they are as people, which I think is really, really cool. But specifically for Travis as kind of a you know, former jock in high school, like that really, really shows a whole bunch to how these people bring life to D&D that I think wouldn't be there otherwise.
That's really cool.
Yeah, he's nice. I like to meet him. But he's also a Cowboys, like a diehard Cowboys fan. So, like, I don't know. Because he's from Dallas, so I don't know how much.
He would. Yeah. He should not listen to our NFL episode.
Yeah, probably not. Travis, if you're listening, don't listen to that episode. And I hope your son isn't an Eagles fan when he gets older. So in addition to that, we've talked a lot a bit about like how the viewership, how much viewership they've had, when they just literally had people watching them play D&D, so like over 135,000 people watching them. They're across all their videos, they have to have had like over 600 million or 60 million views over the course of all of their videos up to this point. And I think a lot of that is just thanks to Twitch and YouTube being such big platforms.
I will never thank YouTube for anything.
Okay. You don't have to.
Good.
I'm so confused.
I do not like what YouTube does half the time in their platform and how they treat their platform and all their people.
Well, no, that's fine. He's just saying that success is thanks to the fact that Twitch and YouTube are huge.
I know.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean I have to like
YouTube. Because
they were
on YouTube before they were on
I just don't know where this came from.
I didn't say you had to like YouTube.
Nobody's like waterboarding you to like YouTube.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. My bad. Hold on. Let me get back. Let me do an outburst on how much I love you two, like the Winx Club, and we'll be okay.
I mean, yeah. You just go back to talking about the Winx Club.
But, like, from their house games to having, like, 500,000 views, like, per episode on YouTube on the low side and turning out 20 to 30,000 people every Thursday night, I think it says a lot about the cast and the content that they produce. So like there's lots of D&D groups, but none of them have had the success that Critical Role has. Even like the ones on Geek and Sundry who do other Dungeons and Dragons stuff don't have this kind of success. And I can't think of any D&D group that's even close to the amount of success that Critical Role has had. Like they had billboards in LA promoting their campaign to premiere. I don't know if that's something that would have happened, you know, 10 years ago when people were hating on 4th edition. Mm-hmm. To now being able to sell out theaters across the country, like not very, very big theaters. So like, for example, they're going to be at New York Comic Con the weekend that this episode comes out, and they're going to be doing a live show in the United Palace on October 4th, which has a capacity of about 4,000.
That's still
which
a lot is like, of people.
Yeah, which is like the biggest one that they've ever been in. They've been in theaters of like 1 to 2,000, but that show's almost sold out.
Also, for people that are interested in New York Comic Con, we will have somebody there covering New York Comic Con and producing content for us. So if you're looking to see what's going on there and stuff, feel free to check out the website.
Yeah, butwhythepodcast.com.
Yeah, so it's like it's basically like 4,000 people who are just going to go and paid money to watch people play Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, because at least on Twitch, you're not like paying money; you're just watching it. This is
Yeah, like these are people who are going out of their way to go to somewhere in like a different part of New York to watch them play Dungeons and Dragons. And I think it's like 3/4 sold out already, last time I checked. So it's going to be, I think it's a pretty big deal. And I think it's just like unapologetic geek fandom, and I'm all about it. Like, I don't think Gary Gygax, who basically created Dungeons and Dragons, ever thought that the game he was playing with his kids would be this big to this day. Mainly because printer presses are a lot better now. But I also think because Geek and Sundry and Critical Role have like really put D&D on the map to a huge, huge extent.
We have jet printers.
So like, I do want to like also point out to you, like I don't see it like in your notes there, but like the fact that there are so many role-playing streams now. Like, Hyper RPG, there's, Role, I think it's, like, Roll for something. Hold on.
Swords and Sundry, I believe, is one of them. I believe it's another one of their shows.
It's like, yeah, Roll for It as well. They're doing a Buffy campaign, like a Buffy tabletop. Like, there's just, like, there's so much out there that it's just, it's insane. And I think none of that gets done without this success here, because now people are kind of like, oh, this is viable, we can do this, and we can put a lot of money and production into this, because people actually want to see people get together and play games.
Yeah, I think the other big part of it too is, even like with this platform, so they get together with even celebrities and bring celebrities on for D&D who I never thought would like play Dungeons and Dragons. So like they brought in, I think like the latest one they did with Terry Crews.
That's super cool.
Yeah, and it was super awesome because they did like a World of Warcraft campaign for like the release of Battle of Azeroth, and like Terry Crews just ran around and screamed as like a orc captain, which is like everything you think it would be. You know, Vin Diesel's done one where he's like a witch hunter kind of thing.
So how many times have you watched that?
I've watched it twice. Once by myself, and then another time to show Stefani that it was the actual thing.
I was like, I figured like that's something you would have like on repeat because it's two of your biggest loves.
Yeah, and then also like they've also had Sam from Game of Thrones, John Bradley as well, come on. So like, they even span into like celebrities in terms of like some of it's like shameless promotion, but like the other part of it is like these people actually do play D&D too. Yeah. So it's showing that like it's a wide range of people that I don't know was like this wasn't here like when you know we were in school.
Oh yeah,
you know what I mean. So one of the last ones is their charity work, and they've really just taken their position as a staple of pop culture seriously and have truly dedicated themselves to using their geekdom for good, which with our community we're super a fan of. We love charities who use their geekdom for good. They've raised hundreds of thousands of dollars for some really great charities. At this point they don't even accept gifts anymore. Like, they just say we're just going to send them back to you if you send them to us. Because they used to get sent, like, pizzas and, like, swords and stuff, like, mid-game.
From pizza to a sword.
Yeah, like, in the early days of when they were just streaming in 2015. But now they just tell them, hey, we're just going to send it back to you. Use that money. Donate to nonprofits. And each cast member has their own preferred nonprofit that they work with, which I think is really cool. So Sam Riegel works with Pavlov, the Pavlov Foundation, which is a childhood cancer organization. Liam O'Brien works with the Planetary Society, which is space and engineering education. Marisha Ray works with the Nature
Conservancy.
So those last two are the only ones that matter. Let's keep going.
Land and Water Conservation Fund. Yeah, because childhood cancer doesn't matter.
There's like 700 charities.
I mean, there are like 700 charities for that.
I could throw a dollar out the window and I bet a childhood cancer charity would catch it.
Matthew Mercer works with First Book, who works with donated books to disadvantaged kids.
I like that.
Taliesin Jeffrey works with First Place for Youth, which supports kids in foster care. Travis Willingham has a lot of connection to like military and stuff, so he was really big when they worked with Stack Up. But he also does a lot of work with Operation Supply Drop, which is veteran support. Laura Bailey, My Friend's Place, which is a homeless youth support organization. Ashley Johnson, Amnesty, Human Rights Organization.
Amnesty International or just Amnesty?
I'm not sure. It says like the biggest human rights organization.
It's Amnesty International. Okay, sorry.
Yeah, so whatever the big one is, yeah. I'd imagine. Yeah, and Brian, who's like one of the... He's like kind of like the MC for a lot of their events, works with Inside Out Writers, which is at-risk youth support. So some other charities, like this is not all of them, but I think this is some of the biggest ones that they've worked with in terms of like the money they were able to raise for like on-stream donations and things like that. Like they've worked with them to do like, if they rolled a one, we'll give you $100 and stuff. And they raised a whole bunch of money through some of these organizations. So Extra Life, of course, everyone knows Extra Life. 826 LA, which is a organization in LA that works with like kids to promote like their creative writing skills, and like they go do like D&D stuff for them and stuff. So really, really great. Stack Up, which I'll let Kate explain here in a second because we can't talk about StackUp without plugging it, and Doctors Without Borders. But my favorite one was definitely the StackUp one, just to see people like Elvis, who is our stack lead, and people like Travis, like working together in this organization. But like the main part of like this section here is like they could have easily just kept getting free stuff from fans, right? Like they could have just kept getting all of these gifts and things like that, but they totally turned away from that and said, just give to, you know, your charities, and that's more than enough for us. And I think that's really, really great, and is truly using geekdom for good and fandom for good, which I love a whole bunch, and probably like one of the most, like one of the biggest reasons why I watch them every week is because they're always partnering with some kind of charity every single week to send any of the donations they get from Twitch and things like that directly to those charities, which is amazing. So we'll wrap up with their impact on fans and some of our fan, but why those, on why they matter, why Critical Role matters so much. So community is everything in geekdom, I think, and I've said it multiple times, I love community surrounding things. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, but Critical Role really does have an amazing community that surrounds them. The Critters is what they're called on social media and such. Really love the team at Critical Role, and the amount of arts and cosplays and fan fiction that have spawned from just these 8 people playing Dungeons & Dragons together for 6 years is really insane to me. Like, I was scrolling through my Twitter feed, and I saw someone who was cosplaying as Laura Bailey's new character, who's like the Tiefling Cleric, who, like, all they really have is, like, art, really. Like, Laura Bailey's, like, never dressed up as, like, that character, but, like, she made a cosplay dedicated to that character, which I think is just crazy. And just an example of just, like, one way that fans really, really do love the content produced by Critical Role. Twitch and YouTube streams, reaction videos, live tweet threads, like, they have a whole subreddit dedicated to them. They just all join thousands of people together for 3 to 4 hours a week to get away from like their daily problems and such. And I just think that's really, really powerful. Whether they can't catch that episode, their VODs really provide people a way for people to kind of catch up and get in on the conversations. So on the subreddit specifically, there's conversations all the time happening about what they think is going to happen next and what they caught that should have been caught or and things like that. Just really great conversations. And in this, you just share really deep moments with character development or like high moments of them killing the big bad for that. And just watching that in person, like live, is just really, really different in terms of, you know, fandom that I've never really experienced. Like watching Hulk get boxed up by Thanos was amazing to see in the theater. But watching like the closing arc of the first campaign is like a different level of investment that I can't really explain. I think it just really comes down to like watching 373 hours of a campaign and then watching it finally come to an end is like a different kind of feeling that I don't really get when I watch like comic book movies. Not that they don't make me feel stuff, but like this is, it was just different watching them finish out that campaign. Then some of our fan but why those that we got from Twitter, at Getsu083 Charles, who is
one of our patrons.
I was waiting for Matt to say lovely patrons.
Oh, Matt, say lovely
one of
patron.
Our lovely patrons.
There we go.
Critical Role matters because I've seen several people talk about how they first discover tabletop RPGs through them, and that's magic so many people should experience. I agree. And then a 4-tweet thread from Barg the Ogre on Twitter. Okay, but why though, PC? Here's why Critical Role matters to me. It is a stellar example of D&D and role-playing that is both accessible to new players and engrossing for seasoned vets. The cooperative story being told by the players is enthralling and an amazing mix of action, drama, and comedy while keeping you guessing and providing twists along the way. Fun fact, if you wanted to binge at Critical Role, it would take 15 days, 16 hours, 40 minutes at the time of this posting, which is a lot of...
It's a lot of time.
It's a lot of time.
I say that as somebody who's rewatched all 13 seasons of Supernatural.
Yeah. The community has sprung up from the show, is amazingly supportive, spawning deluge of mind-blowing fan art and supporting a number of good charitable causes. It puts a focus on the amazing creative and performing talented cast, chief among them DM Matthew Mercer and D&D savant Sam Riegel, who was a newbie to the hobby and ends up with the MVP in so many combats. Finally, it matters because it is helping throw off the stigma that has dogged D&D and shone a light on a misunderstood hobby that brings joy to many nerds. I recommend it to anyone who shows an interest in RPGs if they want to know more. And then finally, I got one from Reddit. I'm just going to double check to see if there's any more. So I also posted a quick Reddit thread of basically just asking kind of like our overarching question, like why does Critical Role matter? Like why do people love Critical Role? On the subreddit, our Critical Role, and this is the one that really stuck out to me and the one that I'll go with, and then we're going to link the thread in the show notes. So this is from Twitza. T-W-I-Z.
You mean Twista?
Twista?
Twista. Twister. Like Twista.
Twista.
But Twista.
Twizzlers.
Twista.
Twista.
I don't know. I'm reading it like Twizzlers. I don't know why. I think it's the big Z throwing me off. But anyway, so my life can be divided into two parts, before and after my sister got sick. Suffice to say, her sickness made life difficult. There was a shouting match every day between her and my parents, self-harm, and she went in and out of hospitals all the time while almost dying. I was 11 when all this started. I quickly donned the mantle of the pillar in the family, a safe harbor, unbending in the storm. I never cried. I was always there for everyone else, although I now realize I didn't have to do that. Make no mistake, my parents are awesome. If they knew how I felt, they would have done something, but I persevered. I wanted to be that rock. What this meant, however, is I basically lost the ability to cry. I didn't cry as my cat died, when my grandparents, or anything. I bottled all that shit up, compressed it all into diamonds, and went on with it. And then episode 115 happened, which is the end of the first campaign. I don't know why it hit me so hard when our beloved rogue went into the void, but all the walls I had built up came crumbling down. Jesus Christ on a bike, I cried. Maybe the fact that I saw all of these people, and especially the guys being able to be vulnerable to each other, made it happen. I don't know. But in the end, I don't bottle everything up as much anymore. I'm okay with being vulnerable.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. And that's the power of Critical Role.
That's a good one.
And there's some really, really great ones on here, too. I recommend anyone who is interested in Critical Role, definitely get in on their subreddit, because they are really, really passionate. And they catch stuff on there that I never would have caught if I was just watching it by myself. So that's really all I got. That's really all I got for Critical Role. Any final thoughts, questions, concerns, ideas?
For final thoughts, I'm glad people enjoy this. It's cool. I see it grow big. People enjoy D&D. I still will probably never play D&D.
I see it grow big.
Yep. About how it goes.
Put that on a shirt, y'all.
I'll still never probably play D&D, and I doubt I'll highly ever watch this. But I'm glad for all the people that enjoy it, and I see what it's done for a lot of people. But I'll play a video game if they make it.
I'd be down to play that. I'd be really down to play that. Just because, like, the world of it, because, like, it's really interesting, because the campaign 1 and campaign 2, like, are all set in the same world, right? Like, campaign 2 is just set years after. So, like, technically, like, they still, like, know about some of the events. So I would be interested in to play a game that kind of puts that. And they all, like, voice act the game. Alright, I'm in. Someone pick it up, please.
You heard it here first. Winx Club is great. Street Fighter sucks. YouTube is terrible. And there needs to be a Critical Role video game.
Yeah.
We're done. End the show.
Do you have any final thoughts, Kate?
No, I mean, I really enjoyed listening to it. And it really has me, like, kicking myself that I haven't watched this. And it also kind of, like, so the way I'm going to go into it is I'm going to probably just download the podcast and listen to the audio, because that's just easier for me to go through. But ultimately, maybe once I catch up, it'd be really good to actually start watching it live, because it sounds like there's a lot of magic that happens live, and I can only imagine that it's, like, amplified by the chat.
Oh, so 10 out of really 10, cool. Yeah. I don't get to catch it as much as I would like on the live shows, but, like, when I do get to catch it live, it's definitely added to by the chat. And they do giveaways and stuff. There's a chance for you to win stuff, too.
Free things! But, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's my final thoughts is everything. I love Critical Role. I wish I got to play Dungeons & Dragons more, but I get my fix by watching them every week, even if I don't get to catch it. Their VODs get the job done, and so do the podcasts. So definitely lots of avenues for you to get into it if you're not into it. And even if you just want to, it's like, it's how I show people what D&D is at this point. Like, I just go to like my favorite clips and I show them, like, this is what D&D is. People getting around and rolling dice and having a good time.
That's really cool. So thank you all for listening. Please make sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. If you love us and you still haven't left us an iTunes rating or review, please take the time to do that now. But like Matt said earlier in the show, you can catch up with all the New York City Comic Con news by going to our website, butwhythepodcast.com. Well, we will have articles coming out from there. We do have somebody from the site covering it. Shout out. Thank you, Kristen Bates. You're the real MVP. And then you can find the podcast at butwhythepc on Twitter. We've been doing a whole bunch of giveaways and stuff, so you can get involved that way. And we're really active on there. Also, you can find me at ohmymythrandier on Twitter. Adrian?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperRuiz93.
Matt?
You can find me watching Twitch.
Oh, and we have an Instagram now, at ButWhyThePC. Well, we have an alive Instagram. It was dead before.
It went all Jesus.
What?
It resurrected?
Oh, God. I didn't get that.
Obviously.
That's funny.